all the committee to order, because in the interest of time, Superintendent Bunn will need to go to another meeting, and I know that you want to hear from him, so I will ask Superintendent Bunn to come forward and talk to us about the education standards and assessments and the quality model.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Stan Bunn, Superintendent of Public Instruction, with offices at 255 Capitol Street. And I'll try to sort of keep a line of vision with everyone as much as possible, but you're pretty well spread out. I might start briefly just visiting about the quality education model and some positive aspects. I see some shortcomings, and then perhaps where we can go from here. Then move into the higher standards that we have embarked upon, and then finally assessment. Historically, as we all know, education was funded largely at a local level, and the decisions were made at a local level. In the early 1990s, a decision was made by the voters to move funding to a central state effort. It's interesting to note that both at the local level and at a state level, the funding on education has been largely a cost-plus funding basis. And by that, I mean it's a little bit like the federal government used to build airplanes. There was a certain amount needed to build an airplane, and then if there were cost overruns, we just added more. And the arguments that could be used by any particular person on what was needed were somewhat subjective. So you could argue less was needed, more was needed. There was some control over that when there was local funding of schools, because every decision was closer to the community, and I think there was more inspection. I think there has been a frustration by legislators as we move to state funding that it is really very difficult to identify how much we should be spending, because historically we had never defined what it was we were about, what a basic education in the state of Oregon was. I believe that the quality education model gave us an interim tool to begin working with that process. And what it said, and what that study effort said, among other things, was we will use our best judgments, and I'm sort of paraphrasing, but use our best judgments to identify the status quo, identify what inputs, such as teachers' efforts and other things, need to go into a model that would provide the greatest opportunity for quality. Now, that was primarily a financial model. It has been moved to some degree from a financial model to an attempt to bring outcomes as a result. I would suggest to you that it is the best model we have to date for attempting to define the level of spending that we should have. But there is no assurance, frankly, that we can guarantee that inputs of certain size and quality buildings, certain numbers of teachers, certain efforts in terms of inputs will have certain outcomes. There are processes that have to go with that, that are not a part of that model, that we need to build as we move forward. And the Department of Education, schools, and the legislature need to work together to identify what those processes are. Just as several examples, one of the most important process items is expectation. What do you expect of your students? That's not number of teachers or size of buildings or any of those inputs. It's expectations. Those expectations can drive some of the greatest results that we might have. Time is a process item. A curriculum has process item elements to it. Having a safe environment in schools is a process item. Assuring that we have the right connections for every student with some adult in the educational system from the day they walk in to the day they leave is a process item that is absolutely critical. those schools that have been successful in maintaining that student-adult connection have been phenomenally more successful. So I want to suggest to you that we need to constructively build on the very helpful work that the quality education model has provided by moving from inputs to both a combination of inputs and processes. But I want to suggest something that I think both the governor's task force and Representative Lundquist's task force worked with and didn't finish, but is perhaps equally important. The promise of those committees, I believe, was, among other things, that we would attempt to define what a basic education is, because you can't define what a basic education should cost until you know what it is. Neither of the processes that occurred finished the process of defining what a basic education is. We are working now at the Department of Education to try to take the administrative rules that exist and other efforts and propose, at least by the next legislative session, what the elements of a basic education might look like. We believe that if over time we can all define what that is, the high standards, the balance, all of the other things that are essential to a quality education, then we can more helpfully define what it should cost. It also, until recently, would not have been possible to deal with quality and cost in combination because we didn't have the data from schools in a comparable form that was usable to identify various costs, how they were applied throughout districts. With the 16 sample districts, if you will, that the database carried out during the last biennium, we have information that allows you to go into a school district and identify what the costs of a classroom are, what the costs for teachers, what the costs for books, other things, and really identify how districts are allocating resources and what might happen if they reallocate it. Assuming the legislature funds the $3.3 million that will finish the database project, that will provide an important component for us to move forward. But I think that you have to have the combination of a clear definition of a basic education, a clear capability to have database information drawn out, and a clear indication that you have to look at both processes and inputs before you can get the needed result. Do you want me to take questions before I move on to others? Are there any questions on that area?
We all understand everything that you said.
At the end of this committee, if they'll just write out a check for $3 million.
Representative Gianella has a question.
I've got a question, but I have an awful. Yes, Mr. Bunn, the database project that you were talking about, is that information in the Oregon Quality Education Model, or is that for those different things?
No, it's completely separate. It was a proposal that was developed by the governor and the legislature in the last session that selected 16 districts to be administered through the Department of Education, where we would gather data on spending in a uniform way, which had not been done previously, and categorize it into categories that school districts, the legislature, and the Department of Education could use to assess how money was being spent and how it could be reallocated as a result of seeing how it was being spent.
Did you say something about needing another $3 million?
The governor's budget and the proposals before the legislature at the present time have just in excess of $3 million to allow the database project to go statewide.
Thank you. Correct me if I'm wrong, Superintendent Fenn, but I think the database initiative, one of its main purposes was to integrate into the quality ed model so that cost accounting could be connected.
That's very true, yes. But I will say this, it has many standalone benefits to it in addition to the reality that it does do that.
Thank you. All right. Okay. Mr. Colangelo.
Glenn Colangelo. I'd just like to ask a question about what you feel the impact of that database thing would be down to the classroom level. And I wanted to ask that of the teachers, too, because I think there's a difference between what the teachers would think, this is just my guess, and what the legislature thinks.
Well, one of the things I can say is that until we had that data in the form that it's been developed, it was very, very difficult for schools to either know certainly or describe clearly exactly how resources were allocated and what the result was in terms of classroom teaching. Because you didn't have the data either collected or broken out in a way that emphasized that kind of review and usage of the material. And so that allows teachers, administrators, legislators, the departments to access information to make decisions in ways that they could not make before because they did not have the information in that form.
Can I ask that
of
teachers?
I just wanted to ask the teachers that are here what your perception of having a database system that's consistent throughout all the districts, how would that affect the schools, in your opinion? Because I have my opinion, but I've been going around to some of the schools and sitting during lunch and talking with the teachers during their lunches at different schools, and I would like to know what you think.
Okay.
I am Nicholas. Anything that will help state government or whoever, the legislature, figure out what it costs to run a school will be helpful for teachers, so that when we have things like school reforms that cost money and it's a mandate without money attached, that hopefully those things won't happen to us anymore. That's a major frustration. People do not understand what it costs, and in the classroom we know what it costs when we have school reform and we don't have any textbooks, we don't have any printing money, and so we don't have all of these things happening. So this is going to help the powers to be figure out financially what's going on, and it's very expensive, but I don't know how we can solve the problem unless the people who make the decisions have a way to understand it.
Martin Bronstein from Corvallis. I think what it did was it really helped to standardize, at least for across districts, how to cost out the cost of having counselors in a program, having certain amounts of FTE in certain programs. So I think it'll help standardize it. What we found out when the state moved to more of their funding was that districts had very different ways of figuring out costs that translated to the classroom and have an impact on programs to students. And so this was an attempt, I think, to try to standardize that a little bit. It only used 16 districts. So I think when the data comes in from other districts, perhaps that might change a little bit of the formula that was used in order to determine costs. But if nothing else, it'll help us all talk the same language when we're talking about budgeting. And I think that's its main purpose. And it does dovetail, as far as I thought, into the quality education model when it came to costing out the prototype schools that the quality education model talked about. And for those of us in Corvallis that have lost a lot of program and a lot of enrichment to our school district since 1990, having lost 25% of our licensed staff since then, I think it'll help us rebuild, if we could ever stabilize some funding, rebuild the programs that we lost and the costs that we can anticipate for that.
Superintendent Burns, when you said define basic education, were you thinking in terms of 4 years of math, so many years of English? What did you mean?
What it ultimately has to be is a consensus definition of what that is, but certainly it would include math and science, writing, reading. But we have to go on and answer the question, do we in Oregon consider the arts a necessary part of our educational system, or do we consider it optional? Because we cannot decide logically how many dollars we're going to spend until we decide what that educational package should look like. And it's not a defined thing at this point. Administrative rules define a part of it, and a part of it is left to every district to decide what it looks like in a way that doesn't allow us to spend dollars rationally on a state level.
If we begin to define in that definitive way, would that then begin to shift and take away from, as I hear a lot, from individuals' local control?
Well, I think that we have to answer the question first, do we want in the state of Oregon to be able to say that we have a minimal quality education that we want provided in every single part of the state? And if in fact we do, then we have a responsibility to define that. If we don't want to do that, then I think a lot of what we're about, we really don't need to be doing.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to respond to Glenn's question over here. The problem that I have with this database, when I taught at the end of the year, we were told there was so much money left in our budget and that we needed to go out and spend that in the last 2 days of school or we wouldn't get as much money the next year. And I'm told this is still happening. I've had someone in my district come to me and say that local businesses had been offered, they'd been asked for credits because the school district couldn't spend $10,000 and they didn't want to lose that money, so they wanted to carry it over till the next year. So the problem is that there's no incentive to economize on budget. The incentive is to spend the budget. And so if those numbers go into this database, you're not getting accurate numbers of what things cost. You're getting numbers that say, this is what we had last year and we spent. How do we guard against that?
Well, first, the fact that there isn't a clear, rational way to determine costs is the very thing that drives irrational decisions like we've got to spend down so that we have evidence that we needed all that money because we spent it all, not that we needed it all because we can demonstrate how it was applied. Now, when you initially show how spending occurred in the database, that doesn't tell you that spending was good, bad, or indifferent. But you can't get to good, bad, or indifferent until you get the figures. And what this is doing for us is getting us the figures so that we can say in ultimately 58 school districts, why did they spend $2,000 less or $500 less or $75 less in every one of those cases than over here? And it allows you to begin to examine and compare. Why did you get a quality product here that everyone identifies as clearly a quality product in school district X, spending the same dollars there on a whole array of things that you spent over here? So the model, the database doesn't promise you on day one that you've selected the right dollars. It promises you that we're now finally measuring in a way that you can then begin the second part of the process.
Just a quick comment. Martin Bronstein from Corvallis. I understand. Just a quick response. I think the days of us being told that we have $800 to spend between now and the end of the year have long been over. The teachers in Corvallis have been told your printing budget is gone and it's February. Or you haven't had a new textbook in 6 years. Try to create materials that work. The days of having a lot of surplus resources, I think, in a lot of districts are long gone. And so it would be nice to have some kind of way of really being able to determine what costs are for having the kinds of quality programs that we'd really like to implement.
Madam Chair, just quickly to conclude on that, there are a whole series of other things that we need that I believe ultimately, if we don't have, would cause failure. For example, we need some substantial designed training opportunities for administrators that train them in a uniform way to use information to make management decisions, because the training that administrators receive as they move from often teaching into administration is at best sporadic in the kinds of things it does. So there are a number of things like that we'll need also. But I believe the database and the quality education model, if we don't overpromise what the pieces do as we're going along, can give us tremendous tools to continue on the road to getting some very valuable assistance from those things. I will move briefly to higher standards and talk about the higher standards we're embarked upon and then the assessment process and answer questions on those together. Oregon, in 1990-91, before it adopted education reform, was in the top third of schools in the nation overall. Now, I could point out bad schools, and I could point out good schools, but on average, our schools in Oregon, before we started that process, were in the top third. Among other things, I can point to continuous top-level scholastic aptitude tests for entry to college, top one or two states. I can point to tests at mid-levels, testing we did on TIMS, international testing, where we came in second to Singapore, that we received the first waivers from the U.S. government on education rules because of the quality of our work. It was recognized and is recognized. Oregon made a decision through the legislature that it wanted to move from being in the top third of the schools to being at the, in the nation, to being at the very top of schools in the world. Now, I'm not sure when we chose to do that, that we had thought through all the ramifications of that process, but that decision was made. It was reaffirmed in 1995, and it is the policy to this date that the legislature has adopted. I want to say very clearly, because I think it needs to be said, it is not an easy process to go through to move from the top third of schools to in the nation to the very top of schools in the world. When you are moving to aggressively move your curriculum and your instruction and your assessment to a level where your students will repeatedly and consistently test with the very best in the world, it takes a lot of work, a lot of guts, and a lot of effort. And I want to say that as we did that process, there is little evidence that the legislature provided the dollars that were needed to go with it to get the job done. They did not provide substantial dollars for professional development of teachers and administrators. They did not provide substantial dollars for the Department of Education to develop a sound curriculum that took completely new writing. In Kentucky and Vermont and Oregon are sort of the leaders in this effort. We stepped out and made those efforts. And they did not provide a number of what I feel were the resources that were necessary. I will say this. I believe that teachers, administrators, parents, and students stepped up to the plate and did it anyway, and have moved from saying, why don't you give us the resources, to we're getting it done, now just be sure that you don't get dumb about how you do it, to the Department of Education. And we have moved forward with math. We have moved forward with reading. We have moved forward with writing. We have developed and written those curricula. The teachers participated in phenomenal ways in helping that happen. And they are teaching students throughout the state of Oregon in ways that look nothing like what we were doing to teach students 7, 8, 9, 10 years ago. And I believe it will have a phenomenal, beneficial result for those students as they compete in the world. Now, does that mean that we've done it all right? I've sort of suggested that the legislature didn't put the dollars forward they should have. I think the Department of Education has done a dismal job of communicating clearly and simply what we were about, that we were improving standards, that we were creating an Oregon advantage. We talk, you know, when Chrysler Corporation talks about safety in cars, they only talk about rack and pinion steering and anti-lock brakes after they've talked about safety as the important issue. We started in immediately talking about the SIM and the CAM and never started first to say, we're doing higher standards to help our students do better things in the world, and that's the Oregon advantage. We didn't do that. We failed in that regard, and we need to change that. That doesn't change the underlying reality that the curriculum that was developed is the finest in the nation. and is serving students well. And I would suggest to you that it is critically important that we stay the course, that we admit our mistakes as we go along, and we correct those areas where we're not doing it as well as we can. And I want to give you a couple of examples. I think in social science, social studies, teachers were telling us in large numbers, you're going too fast, your testing doesn't make sense to us, we need to have you listen to us and dialogue with us. But I want to give you just one example of how communication would have relieved tension. Teachers that I talked to, teacher after teacher, believe that our beta testing of a social studies test, the test we had to go through to find out what was wrong and what was right about it, was the final test. And had we done that simple step of making it clear to everyone involved that this was a beta test, it didn't count, it had to have errors built in because you can't get it right the first time, you've got to go through that correction process, we would have relieved needless fear. Now, I think it's the responsibility of the Department of Education, among others, to say, how do we relieve needless fear, how do we relieve confusion, and how do we assess correctly the workload that's reasonable for us to recommend to the legislature and the State Board of Education. And we will do that as aggressively as we can. But we have found in poll after poll, conversation after conversation with citizens of Oregon, they want higher standards for their students. They want tougher requirements in math, in science, in reading and writing, and they want their kids to be able to read in third grade, eighth grade, 12th grade. And I believe this is a very, very positive thing that is occurring in the state of Oregon. Now I want to shift to assessment for a moment. You cannot have a sound educational program of any kind without assessment. Now that doesn't mean that you don't have to ask the question, is it sound, is it timed well, is it reasonable, is the workload okay? But as you have educational training, whether it's in law school, college, K-12, community college, on-the-job training, you've got to have assessment of it. And if you don't have assessment, you don't have an educational learning process that ultimately works. I think that the questions that have been raised by about assessment go into several categories. There are those who raise issues on assessment because at times the Department of Education has made mistakes. And we have done assessment incorrectly. And when we have done that, I don't believe we've always admitted it. And I think we need to do that. There are those who are concerned about assessment because we haven't communicated that the particular assessment doesn't count or it's a beta test or something like that. There are those who are concerned about assessment because in their particular case, they as a teacher or a student are being absolutely buried with work. And we need to ask ourselves the question in that case, what's happening? Why is it occurring that way? How can we correct it? How can we make it work well? There are those who know that if they can destroy the statewide assessment system, the possibility of failure will not exist. And those, in my mind, are not legitimate, and we should not entertain those as an approach to that process. Now, I think that you have problems with compartmentalization. I have watched with the Department of Education as the specialist in assessment design a technically sound testing process, but sometimes forget to say to the teacher, after we've done this great job of technical design, how does it work for you in the classroom? Is it actually working? Is it overloading? For example, we had a discussion this morning with the associate superintendents in trying to determine whether having a certain test occur in January or May worked better for teachers, students, and administrators. What we concluded we needed to do was put out on our listserv, which is my communication with superintendents, and through the OEA and other teacher efforts, a request to say to them, here are the downsides of January testing, here are the downsides of May testing, here are the upsides of each. Which do you want? So that we could say to the educational community, which works best for you? and design it so that it actually works best for them. I believe that many of the concerns we have with assessment can be relieved by better communication, by trying to design better timing, trying to give better access at easier times, and relieving the teacher of part of the workload of the assessment process. I called around to about 10 school districts recently on national TIMSS testing to ask them to re-up because our testing would have been cured if they didn't. And they described to me that they're doing local testing, they're doing state testing, and they're doing national testing. We should not have all of that testing going on. We should not certainly have it going on at the same time. But I want to go back to the basic that whatever we do on assessment, it needs to be done because we can't do the teaching, the remediation, the correction, the adjustment without an assessment process. With that, I'd be glad to answer questions on either one of those.
Superintendent Byrne, you had mentioned that you were going to do a review of the administrative rules as you look at the whole scheme of basic ed. Are you also going to look in that process of some of those rules that may not be necessary, and also look at the mandates and whether or not we're actually funding those mandates or whether we have them there and there's a struggle to implement those? Is that the kind of review that's going to...
Our review will be, I would describe it as a starting point. As you can imagine, those administrative rules and every decision that is made is politically charged. Someone can be a winner and a loser, but we can describe accurately a beginning point for a discussion of what a basic education should look like. It will never work successfully unless there is a broad-based discussion throughout the communities in the state of Oregon and a consensus developed around it. We will look at mandated programs and other programs, and at some points we may need to have sort of an asterisk that says federal government requires until they change. It's just a part of what we're going to do.
And it could also be state requires and it's no longer useful or
yes. Available. I think the process of identifying what a basic education is requires you to identify in the administrative and the rules and law what is surplus, what is outdated, what no longer serves the purpose. And I suspect that as we do that process, we won't in the end get it into a totally perfect state because it's a political process, but we can get it into a state that is very usable by students in the state.
Thank you, Mr. Bell, I have four children, and I have them tested yearly with the California Achievement Test, the California Test of Basic Skills, and others because I want to be able to compare how my children are doing nationally. One thing that concerns me about the Oregon test is you cannot compare nationally. And those are the only ones that are required, I believe. Why do we have separate Oregon tests? Why can't we use nationally normed standardized tests?
Well, I'll give two answers, Representative Close. First, three ESDs in the Portland metropolitan area are working with a private company to design in math, reading, and writing tests that identify comparison to national norms and test the new Higher Oregon standards. And those will, if the promise comes as they've designed them, measure both in one test. That's the kind of thing we need to work for. But I don't think as we embark on the highest standards in the world that we should say we're going to drop those standards so we can compare to California on a lesser standard. I think what we need to do is say, how do we do just what they're doing in those three ESDs and measure both in one test?
Well, would you agree that it's harder to tell how Oregon students are doing if they're taking a different test than the rest of the nation?
Well, for example, it's not hard to tell that Oregon students who take a TIMSS international test are doing better than anyone else except Singapore in a particular category. It's not hard to tell when we develop this ESD proposal with one test, and it has the national norms that we are doing we are meeting Oregon benchmarks, the very high benchmarks, and at the same time doing a comparably positive job on national norms. I think we have a responsibility to design our testing over time so that we can measure how we're doing against other states and do it simply.
Kristen, do you know?
Yes, Madam Chairman. Yeah, Superintendent Vaughn, pleasure to have you here. Thank you for coming and spending your time with us. You mentioned something about the legislature didn't put dollars forward to implement the PIM and the CAM. Has anyone estimated how much that would have cost?
The estimates of costs are a little like all of the other estimates of costs we've had in education to this point. One person can say it takes this much and another can say it takes this much. But what we can do is you can get a continuum of possible costs and you can say it's pretty clear that if you embark upon this aggressive a program, that you clearly need training for teachers in how to use new scoring guides, in how to develop new curriculum to higher standards. And you can get a base cost of that kind of thing. Truly, we've done a little bit like as if it were the Boeing company and the management of Boeing came down onto the floor and said, we're going to build a 787. We have no design plans. We have no more money for you, but you've got to build the plane. And teachers and administrators went out and built that airplane. And it was very difficult. And there are a number of elementary teachers throughout the state that are feeling a great deal of burnout because of that process. But I think that it is that we did underfund and we've gotten through the greatest part of the crisis. And I think what we need to do at this point is not as much money as carefully looking at time frames, looking at logical implementation. Looking at clearing up the confusion that has existed and speaking in simple terms. The best speech I ever heard on education reform was a Lincoln County grade school teacher who talked about getting back to the three R's, reading, writing, and arithmetic, and that we were doing it through our education reform effort. And that's understandable to the public. I don't think the SIM and the CAM is totally understandable to the public.
Colangelo, I admit as a teacher, I spent my time in my own little world. So you probably already know the answer to this, but I'm going to ask it anyway. If, like for a third grade benchmark, has that been translated? I'm not against anything you're doing, by the way. It might come across that way, but I'm not. Has that been translated into textbooks and then performance tasks and then teaching modules or teaching units and then modules and then overall courses? I mean, starting at kindergarten, or is it like been set without all those other pieces to build up to it?
Well, the answer is a mixed result. Our textbook selection process is a 7-year process that's completely out of sync with what we're doing in education reform, and those two need to be brought into sync. However, for example, in reading, we have designed assessment in reading that allows a teacher, as they're going along, to assess how well a teacher or a student is reading a particular piece and ultimately how that works with the benchmark that we set for that. So the answer is, yes, we're moving toward that. It's not perfect, but we have scoring guides and designed curriculum and other things that give teachers support to do that. But, for example, the question on textbooks, we're out of sync on textbook, and that's a legislative mandated time frame. And we need to change it. We'll recommend to the legislature change on it.
Can I follow up to that?
Follow up.
So, restating what you said, it's like the benchmark set, the test is given, but the stuff that builds up to it isn't there yet.
No, that's not what I meant to say. We developed the curriculum. We developed the content. The Department of Education, in conjunction with teachers and schools throughout the state, developed that core material to be taught that is a higher standard core. That had to be done before you could teach it. So it is there. It exists in reading and math and writing. All I'm saying is there was a quality job done there, but every single thing that you'd like to have in place hasn't been put in place, but 95% of them have. And the material that is needed by a teacher to do a quality job is there.
Gretchen Hodgson.
Thank you. I hope I'm not going to ask an unfair question. Seems to me, in looking at the parks that haven't been funded, one of the largest single items is the extension of the school year, a number of days. In other words, I think we'd all agree if kids had more time in the classroom or class that hopefully their achievement would increase. Do you have any idea of all the costs for an additional days?
I don't. I'll provide to the committee what the additional costs would be, and I'll make a note to do that. There is, in addition to the cost issue, there are, in addition to cost issues, political questions there that also need to be addressed, but I'll get that information for the committee.
Or I can maybe divide it out.
May I just say one thing in concluding and then other questions? I want to plead for thoughtful review of another issue. That is the fact that nationally, but more important to us in Oregon, there is going to be a very large exodus of teachers in the state of Oregon and a huge vacuum. One of the reasons for our success and the fact that we're in the top third of states in the nation in quality of education is that we have well-educated teachers comparatively, we have well-paid teachers comparatively, and we have driven successfully in Oregon a process that had at the core of our success a quality teaching force. That is, in the next 10 years, a crisis level issue that the Oregon legislature needs to grapple with.
Superintendent Bunn, what advice would you give the student committee as we go forward in refining the quality ed model?
The first piece of advice I would give is advice that I would give to any business, nonprofit organization, or entity. Don't bite off more than you can chew. Take a small, realistic effort that you can deal with. Do it well. Do it successfully. Identify what your mission will be in that regard, and then carry through on it and deliver to the legislature and the governor a product that is usable in that limited regard. Because the history of committees, particularly large committees, is that they try to do too much, and the danger is that they do little, and I think you can avoid that. The second thing I would say is that always identify the limitations of your work so that it won't create more promise than exists. And then finally, I think to work with those processes, go beyond the step of the inputs and say, what processes add to what we can do, the expectations, the safety of schools. But again, you have to define how narrow or broad you want to work in that regard.
Diane McGill, the absolute student aid that I'm at, English department coordinator in high school. I teach math and 10th grade. And I just have a couple comments. Number one, in terms of test timing, we're talking about January or May, our test window is really critical. And that window is very narrow, because we have semester testing at the high school level, and the test window right now in January, in terms of giving a two-day writing test and allowing to make up, has been awful. isn't it? And then, the turnaround time in terms of test results. When we're telling teachers, we want to communicate to students, and right now, I know this is a particularly difficult problem, but in June, we were told that we would get a two-day turnaround, our two-week turnaround on writing, and a one-week turnaround on reading. Well, we're waiting. and I know there's a lot of other things that are coming into it, but we have also said that we're going to build and make some decisions about placement of students based on these tests, and we're waiting to build a master schedule. And again, and I know there are reasons for all of this, but these are some problems. And as we look at, I mean, I know you're talking about that the core material is designed and we have the curriculum, but school districts are constantly being asked to do so many things that money is a critical issue, and many, many classrooms are struggling without writing textbooks, classroom sets of old literature books. We haven't had time to train teachers. the reading, opening and reading assessments that we need to implement with our kids beginning next year. For each incoming class of 452, we provide multiple opportunities. In a two-year period of time, we're going to have to provide 100,000 pieces of print. And when I said that figure, because we, I think the classmates were starting to put some of these assessments together, and people go, we don't have anything that's backing this up. So from the start, I am very worried about the teachers, because lots of things aren't in place, and we are going to get, and we have been, and we will continue to be beat up in the newspapers about what we are or aren't doing. And there's a whole bunch of stuff that we don't have.
I think those are excellent points. For example, on the load of work that teachers have, we recommended to the state board in their last meeting, and they accepted a freeze on work samples, saying we need to study the level of work samples and in the meantime freeze those. On the window of opportunity for testing and when the test results come back, it frankly doesn't matter if we have great excuses for why we don't get test results back in time. If you can't use them, you can't use them, and it's not any good, so we need to remove those excuses. I will be appearing before the Ways and Means Committee next week to urge them to adopt a local assessment that allows immediate access, a student walking out with the test results the same day, a number of things that will help there. And I do believe that each of these issues we need to work with. If we stay with our work on math, reading, and writing, and really refine and clean it up and give some time for the other items, do a better job of testing, and then I think we can better meet the needs and concerns of teachers. But I see the overload and the potential burnout that exists, and I agree that it's there.
Yes, I'm Jennifer Ross, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm a bilingual second grade teacher, and my question is, as we look at funding and those kinds of things, do the higher standards address the bilingual issue that is growing in Oregon?
Yes. We were one of six states in the nation that applied for, among other things, migrant education funding that dealt head-on with bilingual issues as a part of it. We, for example, have translated the tests into Spanish and give the tests in Spanish. We are now translating into Russian and we'll be prepared to give the tests in Russian. We are giving assistance to second language students in making the transitions more effectively and faster to the capacity for English. And we have done that on a statewide basis, and we're the only one of the six states that applied for money that has done it on a statewide basis. The others all said we'll take a little chunk. And we have partners like OPB, Oregon Public Broadcasting, who put training in these areas on public broadcasting so students can access. So, and 35% of our student growth is in minorities, and a very large number of those are minorities that have language barriers. So it is clear that there has to be a concern and a direct dealing with that issue.
So am I hearing you saying that really the state is prepared to let the kids pass the benchmark in their native language?
No. What I'm saying is we're prepared to help students pass the benchmark with the greatest possible help they can, and that may be using their native language as a part of the transition.
I'm just looking for a pretty clear, are we asking the kids to pass the benchmark in English?
We're asking in most cases for that to occur, but not all.
Any additional questions? I mean, we've covered all of the standards and assessments, and no one has any more questions.
Actually, I have two questions. The first one goes back to something you said towards the beginning about Oregon's goal to be the number one, the students to be number one in the world. And the question is, are we talking about comparing the top part of the Oregon students to the top part of the other students, or everybody in Oregon? One of the things that I like about Oregon, one of the reasons why I'm here, other than my grandfather grew up in LeGrand and all that stuff, is because we're concerned about all the students, all the way down to whatever level they are. Are we talking about comparing all the students in Oregon to all the students somewhere else? Is that something that's a possible comparison?
Yes. This is not an elitist process. Right in the statute, it says all Oregon students, that means special education students every student shall have the opportunity to meet the benchmarks. So what we're doing is taking the entire student population and moving that entire student population up. Now, there'll still be some here and here, but they'll be there instead of here and here.
Is that a system that's in place in any other state or in other countries where they are concerned about all of them? Because when we're comparing what we're doing to them, how do we do that?
It's all over the board. Germany makes distinctions, and they shuttle some students into vocational education and some into higher education, and they make discrimination that way. Many countries select their, quote, elite and move them along on a track like this and leave others behind. Our commitment, I think, is the wisest commitment to say that every student in our school shall have access to this quality opportunity.
I have one more question. Every time someone says something about how much teachers are paid or that they're paid well, I have this question in the back of my mind. You're the first person where I feel like I can ask this. Are you aware of the fact that a lot of the teachers, when they see what needs to be done, they just spend their own money to make sure that it gets done?
You know, for the situation that was pointed out by Representative Close, where it was an indication that we needed to spend down the budget, I can point out 10 times where I've had people tell me about, a parent tell me about the teacher in their classroom buying all these supplies, $500 worth of supplies, $750 worth of supplies, so that their kids could have the added step or the added effort they wouldn't have otherwise had. And it happens all over the state of Oregon in large numbers. But I want to point out something we do in our debate. In our debate, the nature of public debate is to talk about budget problems for 6 months, about problems with labor issues, and we don't spend 6 months celebrating our test scores or celebrating that teachers go out and every day buy more supplies and that sort of thing. We need to change the nature of the debate to include both of those things. I can say from crisscrossing the state, we have dedicated, hardworking teachers in the state of Oregon that we can be proud of.
Superintendent Dunn, we spent a considerable amount of time our last meeting discussing the 90% that's within the attainment within the quality model, and our discussion felt that it was rather unrealistic to have that percentage. What is your analysis and opinion?
You mean of students attaining? I'll answer without giving you a concrete answer on that. I can point out districts in the state of Oregon where a whole class of average students are doing phenomenal things in Spanish. And you would think they were the cream of the crop, but they're doing it because the expectation in their school was raised for them to accomplish that. I have seen 30%, if I remember the number correctly, of special education students in Portland are meeting the standards because we expect them to meet the standards. So I believe that it is a reasonable target that says if we expect this of students, we're going to get some phenomenal results. And we can, as we go along, measure whether that's realistic, but I think large numbers of students can meet the goal.
The flip side of that is that what happens to the 10%?
Well, I'll give you the example of how I think we need to be doing this that takes some time and thought, and it is this. This system should have never been designed to stamp on the forehead of those who, quote, didn't pass the test, failure, okay? When we, in the scouting program, developed merit badges, and some of you may have heard me say this before, as you were moving toward a merit badge, you were never a failure as you were trying to get there and working on the trail. And when you finally got there, you were a success on it. We don't have the answer to what happens to the other 18%, and that's a discussion I have at the Department of Education. And frankly, it may be a lot larger than that in the first couple of years.
Thank you, Chair. Superintendent Bunn, a question about STEM requirements. Reynolds High School, I understand, is the only Oregon high school to require STEM for graduation. Do you think that's something that other high schools should consider, other school districts?
I think we should ultimately design the system so that if we truly have the best educational components in the STEM, there should be an incentive and a meaningful reason to have it. Now, the fact that the state is going to measure and report is driving schools all over the state of Oregon to do it. I think that as we recognize the different developmental ages of students and adjust appropriately for those things, that having a diploma that has a sim as a component of it is an extremely valuable thing.
Superintendent, I'd like to follow up on Representative Winter's question about the 90%. Indeed, you started your presentation in part by saying you shouldn't be holding office with unrealistic expectations. Is there another way of framing our goal? The point of the 90% was to create some sense not only what would be accomplished, but also of what is underlying the design of a quality model. Is there some other way to capture the underlying mission of the quality model, perhaps in terms of providing every child with an opportunity for a quality education, or some other way of framing it that doesn't get us into this 90%, 10%, or whatever nightmare? It's a discussion that seems to go down a number of dead ends.
I think that we can always appropriately struggle with what is the best measuring tool, but I want to be a fairly strong advocate for the reality that students respond incredibly effectively to high expectations for them. That is one of the strongest driving forces in determining educational results. And we have large numbers. You know, the 90% is an average for schools. It's being treated as an average for schools. And there are a lot of schools who are close to that level. I mean, that is not as unrealistic as you may think. I think it's worth having some people come in and talk about where we're actually at on that. I met with 35 superintendents two months ago, and asked them what they were prepared to do in terms of acknowledging that their schools could meet a goal by a certain time frame, and they indicated that they felt comfortable with, and there were four who did not feel comfortable with this out of the 35, they felt comfortable with having a target of 90% within 3 years. And my best judgment was that if 31 out of 35 of the superintendents of those schools felt that way, that would be appropriate to work with.
Representative, you know.
Yeah, Madam Chairman. Superintendent Bunn, the town of Woodburn has an awful lot of Russian and Spanish-speaking children, and I heard you say something about they're asked to pass the test in English, but some can have Spanish tests. Is that, can they have Russian tests also?
We are in the process of developing testing in Russian.
Follow-up, Madam Chair. How do they decide which ones get to take the test in Spanish? Does that depend upon how much English they can speak? Or
No. It's really determined, and this is literally the truth, by which people in the schools and the Department of Education are going to work additional hours in the evening to get the capacity developed, because that's really what we're down to. It's just a question of the capacity we can develop. We have a growing population of students that have language barriers. We are dealing with that probably more aggressively than 95% of the states in the nation, and we are behind the eight ball.
Superintendent, I just want to follow up on a statement that you made about Tim and McCann, and maybe we would have been better off if we would not have used that as our rallying point, but rather talked more in terms of high standards and some of those framed in that context, that the public or the image, if you will, might have been much more acceptable had we done that. Do you think that in the future that we should continue to talk about SIMS and CAMS?
We created a whole new language as we created this system, and I don't know why we did it. I don't know why we created a new language. I'm maybe in the minority in that, but we didn't. but we didn't have to do that. And I'm frankly spending time at the Department of Education saying, let's start talking in a different way. Let's talk in a way that the public has always understood. They understand higher standards. They understand better results in math. They understand having an advantage for your kids. And that's the language we need to be talking in. Now, it's not bad for Chrysler, once it's talked about safety, to get into rack and pinion steering and anti-lock brakes, if it's in the context of safety. So if in the context of an advantage for your students and higher standards, you want to then talk about those things, I think it's okay. But we started talking about them as if they were the end.
I don't think you're alone in this.
Okay. And I want to commit to you that I am trying to have us sort of redesign our conversation at the Department of Education into more common language that will be easier for all of us to embrace.
Yeah,
question.
First of all, Madam Chair, I apologize. I got caught in the high-five nightmare. We left at 1:40, and we just left. Oh, goodness. That's really pretty.
Is that a really cool?
Four semis and two cars, and some people drilled. That's terrible.
We're glad to see this.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Well, we thank you for coming in, visiting, and sharing with us, and we hope we can invite you back in the future. And we do have Joanne Swift is with us from the department.
Oh, I actually am thinking that I don't have a lot to add to what the state superintendent has said, and I'm really delighted to have a chance to follow him because I think he's represented to you a lot of the really energizing things that we're having conversations about in terms of improving the system and really communicating with schools and districts about some of the things that we want to be working on. So I had thought that I would represent to you some of the recommendations for really pacing the work that we're doing and what the State Board of Education is looking at in terms of really trying to recognize some of the timelines that we've been working on may not be quite as realistic, and perhaps we need to look at how fast we're going and to answer questions. Actually, other than that, about all I had prepared for you, I had understood that you had some questions, and any that the superintendent didn't answer, I'd be happy to answer.
I should let you know that Joanne is in charge of curriculum development. Just for those of you who don't know what she's responsible for, she has a huge responsibility, and so while you have the opportunity to have her here before us and ask questions, I would encourage you to do so.
Maybe she could give a little bit of better background.
Yes.
To work to do that. I actually am the Associate Superintendent for Curriculum and School Improvement. Our office primarily works with K-12 education in all of the areas except special education, special federal compensatory programs, professional technical education, or the CAM development, and the assessment. And that seems like a lot, but we do everything that isn't that, and that almost is easier to explain to you than to list all of the things that we do. Actually, one of the areas of responsibility we have is for the accountability system, which really relates to the quality education model and some of the discussions that you've been having about what will it take in the way of what we do to fund the system and to, beyond that, put in place those pieces that would lead to the kind of results that we really have been hoping to have. My background, I actually started out, I have a two-part career. I started out in early childhood education,
actually working with preschool, and you may get the picture here pretty soon, that I sort of grew up with my kids in education. I started out with preschool and early childhood education, worked with parent involvement in schools and staff development, worked with multicultural programs and bilingual advisory groups in the early years, did quite a bit of teaching reading, and then took a break and really spent a lot of time with my children and did a number of other things, and including being a school board member and budget committee member and booster club president and all of those things that you get to do when you have children moving through the education system. Then I had children that were nearly ready to leave home, and I was finding I was enjoying high school students so much that I thought I wanted to spend the rest of my life with them, and not just until my own children left, and went back and started teaching high school, moved into administration, and somehow ended up with a call from the state superintendent asking me to come and assist with implementing the Oregon Educational Act. And I've been at the department since February of 1994 working with that.
Martin Bronstein from Corvallis. Thank you, Madam Chair. One of the things that Glenn mentioned earlier with knowing what your responsibilities are, as clearly delineated as you just did, was the articulation of the needs that our students have way back. Now I know you're also an early childhood expert. From the early primary years all the way up through the benchmark years, I teach a 4th-5th blended classroom. And while my fifth graders are obviously held to the benchmark standards in many areas, including reading, which we've done this year, although it's not required till next, I'm curious to know what the State Department is doing to help districts figure out how to articulate the curriculum so that we can really prepare students on all those non-benchmark years. We in our own district had to kind of invent that ourselves, and it was very difficult for us to have to do that because we don't have much time to get together with intermediate age student teachers in primary and then the middle school and high school teachers trying to really articulate it clearly all the way up. And so we could certainly use some help from the State Department, and it hasn't been there for us. All we've been pretty much getting are the changing scoring guides and the new ways of assessing students and the parameters and dates that we need to do when we're implementing our assessment. So I'm hoping that maybe you and Superintendent Bunn and others can kind of take a more broader look at what's happening out there and give us a little bit more assistance.
Thank you.
More of a comment
really,
than a question.
Well, it's a very good comment, and I think that it's really important to clarify, and I think this is something that we've not done. If we had, we probably would understand the pressure that we're all feeling a little more. In the 1995 session, we were directed to establish the standards. Prior to that, we had 11 general outcomes. We did not begin establishing the standards until after the 95 session, which we did in a year, which is about three times as fast as any other state did them, considering we had a very public process and more drafts than I care to remember. We actually, I think, went through that process fairly quickly, but it was not until October of 1996, which, for those of you who are educators, you get something in October, you can't do a whole lot with it until you go through the next summer and actually have a chance to sit down and work together to design curriculum. So it was effectively the fall of 1997 when schools and districts really had the standards to implement. If you think of it between the fall of 1997 and where we are now in 99, that's a year and a half. it's a much different time frame than saying the Oregon Educational Act was passed in 1991. And so we have noticed an incredible amount of pressure on schools and districts from the time we started really with the standards in 96 until now. And that is what we're experiencing. That's when all the pressure just kind of hit. And fortunately, we've begun quite a bit of development work in some of the areas in reading, writing, math before the standards were developed. And so that was a lot easier for us to put together. We actually had some resources, at least. Science and the social science areas, that's not the case, and we're feeling that. To address the issue, though, of will the Department of Education be able to assist schools, that's an absolute priority for us. But we went through a process in 1997-98 year of aligning the standards with the proficiency-based admission standards, and that process, again, took us some time. That was something people felt was incredibly important to do. If we couldn't say that from the time a child entered kindergarten until they went to college, they were, in fact, on the same track. It wasn't going to be, you know, here's this track, and then here's this track, and then here's this track. It's all one track that you're moving on. That seemed incredibly important. We also have had a 55% reduction in staff in the curriculum area, and it has left us with 0.4 FTE for those of you who are educators, 40% time for those of you who are not. With math and with English, which includes reading, writing, and speaking, as well as literature. 0.2 FTE in the arts. We no longer have a health or a physical education specialist. And that has made it incredibly difficult to do more than just establish the standards. So when people look to the Department of Education to help with those things, it's really a two-part process. One is getting far enough along in the process that you have a fixed target and you can design something and say, okay, this is what we're going to stick with, and let's get all of the support in place for this. And I think we have reached the point where we better just do that. I don't think there's any patience for much more in the way of shifting. The other thing is we really are going to have to utilize a lot of resources other than the State Department of Education, but we probably need to have somebody at the state that's accountable, and we have in the budget dollars for a full-time reading specialist, a full-time math specialist to raise the percentage, so we can say to the person there, you go out, and I don't care whether you bring together four districts that have got something and come up with the kind of products that you can make available to teachers and get that information out to them and help them to be able to use this. Whatever process you use, you get that done so that the beginning of the next school year, we don't sit there struggling with, you know, what am I supposed to use? It was not such a problem when we had plenty of money for textbooks. But I can tell you, the norm now is 10-year-old textbooks in the state of Oregon. And that is appalling, because 10-year-old textbooks are not going to help students meet the standards. They're just not going to do it. And I hope addressed your question and perhaps given you an idea of this is where we need to focus next. It's where we are right now.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm curious. You talked about developing the standards, and I think you talked about you had them completed in the fall of 1997. Were those developed in-house at the Department of Education, or did you have an advisory committee that met regularly with you from the teachers at the local level that actually had to implement and put into place, you know, their children to meet the standards?
The original development during the course of that year were panels of teachers and other educators. There was a content panel that was convened that did some initial work, and then we had twice during the year 16 meetings in all regions of the state for input, in-person input, as well as mailing 6 drafts out to every school building in the state for teachers to comment and send those comments back. We did put them on the internet the last time so that we could get feedback that way by email. It was an extremely large process. Now, did all 27,000 teachers in the state participate? No, unfortunately not. But there were an awful lot of people who did participate. We went through professional organizations as well. So, for example, in the case of the math standards, the Oregon Council for Teachers, Teacher of Mathematics was another group that we used to help with that process.
Follow up, thank you. Did you ever think that maybe it would have been more efficient to have an advisory group that was representative of teachers' viewpoints out there working on this, but also with an avenue that other teachers could certainly weigh in? Because it seems to me if you keep changing your panel and people you're listening to, it can become very chaotic. And so I have a concern.
I didn't perhaps clarify that. We did have a content panel that was the panel and continues today. We still have that same panel.
I would like to clarify something that was asked earlier of Superintendent Bunn. You were talking about the age of the textbooks being 10 years and all that. I asked this question. I'm going to ask it again. Just slow at understanding the way things are said in some of these things. Let's say there's a benchmark, third grade benchmark. That's set right now, right?
Right.
It is, okay. And assume that there's a test there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is there textbooks, performance tasks, work samples, teaching units, modules, and courses that prepare the students for a third grade benchmark? Because Superintendent Bunn said that all that's in place, but in any of the schools that I've ever talked to, it isn't. But I didn't say that when he said that. So the question is there like this ideal model curriculum, including the textbooks and all that other stuff that's set in place somewhere that the school districts are supposed to somehow, you know, work towards?
We have models available at the department. They are models. They are grade-level curriculum. They do have tasks and resources attached to them, and they are available. We have not gone further and to collect those models from school districts that we feel have done some excellent work, but those are available. They've been distributed. In fact, this is essentially the process that we've had to use with our staffing. We had grants that were given to all of the ESDs in the state to work with local districts to develop grade-level curriculum and tasks and resources for meeting the standards. That was done in English and mathematics, and those products are available. They generally were distributed from the ESDs in the local regions, but we have them from all.
This is a follow-up. I just want to restate. So there is somewhere, like if I said, as a parent, because I have lots of kids, all of them are real young right now, so they're going to be going through school. They're a kindergartner. There's like a set curriculum that the kindergartners would use to get them ready for the first grade, which gets them ready for the second grade, which get them ready for the third grade, in all those areas of math and reading and all that. But the school districts just don't have them yet, right?
No. You asked actually a different question. Let me tell you how it was different. I said, are there model curriculums? Are there model curriculums available? There are. Whether or not each district has the authority to adopt their own curriculum. So if I gave you the curriculum, the model curriculum, you would have to determine whether or not that model curriculum was something that would be used in your district. In statute, there was a lot of clarification done about this, and it says very clearly that the curriculum is to be left to the local district. In other words, we do not have a state curriculum, so I can provide you models, but I cannot provide you a state by grade level curriculum. That is not the role of the state in the Oregon Educational Act, and that's the distinction. So at the district level, there probably are those kind of materials. If there are not, there are model curriculums available from the state that a district could look at or teachers could utilize.
Can I? I really want to understand this so bad. Because when I sit and talk to teachers, I'd like to be able to talk intelligently. So if a school district wanted an idea of what to use to get to the benchmark, there's stuff there, including what textbooks to use, which performance tasks to use, all those different kinds of things, the courses to take, the way to divide up the school day, all those kinds of things, if they wanted it.
If you've gone a little further now, their curriculum is there. Some of them talk about textbooks that are available. We do have products that we could share with you that talk about ways to divide up the school day, but that they're not part of the same product. The last two things you mentioned went a little bit further than curriculum.
I'm not trying to be funny. It reminds me of this issue. Can I say this? I don't know what the rules are on legislature. It's like if we were in one of those Marine World shows where the dolphins are trying to jump over a certain thing into a hoop, and the water in the pool isn't up to the level it needs to be for the dolphin to, you know what I'm talking about? Does that make sense? Isn't that what it seems like? So we need to, like, fill the pool up with water to the level that was intended so that we, or the students, or somebody's the dolphin, I'm not sure who, so we can jump through that
I'm sorry.
I'll just tell you, we have created a very interesting system in this state from a policy perspective because we do not have state curriculum, but we have state standards. And that is something that we have chosen to do. And it does create some measure of confusion because you have state standards. The state can develop model curriculums to suggest or recommend to local districts. But local districts, with a local school board, makes a determination which of those model curriculums or their own, or none, leave their teachers to get the kids their standards themselves. They choose to adopt. And that's something that happened at a statutory level. There's not a whole lot that the State Department of Education can do about that, except to provide, hopefully, excellent models and excellent training, which I have really tried to let you know we're very much wanting to spend our time on getting out and making it.
Given that statute and given the look at developing a quality model, it makes it extremely difficult. Because if you have on the one hand, you know, that if let's say that we did come up with what we thought was the basic model of quality, and with the local district, the local school board having the option to accept or to reject, would create still again the same conflict that we have currently. That's interesting.
Madam Chair. What's missing here, and it actually might not be missing, maybe this is something that you do, but even given the fact that the local school boards can make some decisions themselves, you have the standards and then how they get there, they make themselves, but there would be great value, I think. I'm in two professions, and I have to take continuing classes to bring me up to date on new things we're doing and so forth. And did the State Board of Education ever have or offer classes or training on where you were trying to go with this, what the standards are, what they meant, some possibilities? Did you do that with the teachers?
Absolutely, many times over.
Yeah, because I have heard that didn't happen very well. can you kind of tell me what, how you did it?
Now, I need to tell you as well that we have provided lots of information and we've provided lots of training. Is it enough to reach 27,000 teachers in the system? No. Is it enough to reach all of the districts? Yes. And that's where it stops.
I'm not talking just about written material. I'm talking about in-person training. Somebody from the state going, you know, being a trainer and going around, and you can start off by training the administration or whatever in a school district, realizing you can't get to every teacher or a representative group of teachers and then expecting them to do further training. Was it like this? Because when I talk to people out on the street those days, the teachers, I don't get that impression, and so I'm curious.
I think we have been more effective with administrators than with teachers. There is no question about that. We have not reached teachers, and that is something that causes a great deal of concern.
Madam Chair, can I please? And I have a lot of questions since I had to come late. I've been going to the Portland Public Schools. This is my new home, and I would like to get a feel for what's actually going on there. It's really interesting. In the schools that I visited so far, the consistent message that's coming across, perhaps because I am a retired educator myself and more sensitive to that, is the pressure that is put on teachers. And I remember hearing you report to a committee before this legislature actually started about your concern of losing your teachers as they get older and grayer, and even young. I can think, perhaps I said this before, I can think of two young men who were my student teachers that would have been wonderful teachers. They taught for a year, and I happened to see them in a social thing, and I said, how are things going? And they said they're no longer teaching. As I hear about the pressures that are on the teachers to meet these standards, you know, teachers by their nature tend to be, and I'm generalizing, very conscientious people. I'm concerned about that problem of keeping your teachers, your old ones, as long as they are willing to work, and especially your young ones. And related to that is that, and as I was listening to you talk too, is the preparation that teachers need, young, developing student teachers. Is it the role, or do you perceive it as the role, of the Department of Education to somehow draw in teacher education of schools to actually teach them how to do it? Because I sense that that is a concern, that's a lack. And do you see that as a job of the department? And I realize you have the same things that all the teachers that I've been talking to are limited. They're coming back and coming back. So it makes it hard in the department. But do you see that need, and can you come up with some ways to actually deal with that?
It's very definitely a need. I apologize. I don't know whether this is formal and I should be going through you, Madam Chair. I'm kind of looking to make sure you don't.
I recognize you, but
it feels a little strange not to be in a formal session, quite as formal a session. But let me know if I move here. it's certainly, I think it's a partnership. We've all got to be involved in trying to make sure that teachers who are coming out of our teacher education programs really are well qualified. The primary responsibility for oversight is the Teacher Standards and Practice Commission. They're the ones that approve the programs. They're the ones that can say this program is not adequate and needs to be improved in these areas. That's not a department function in the state of Oregon. It is in most states, but it's not in the state of Oregon. So that is something I think that really we have to be very cognizant of. But as a partnership, we all need to try to share information, including local districts who hire those teachers. We need to give feedback to the schools of education and say this person is prepared or they're not prepared.
Mm-hmm.
And we have actually had about half a dozen meetings with all of the teacher education programs, and we regularly attend their professional organization to try and share with them what we think and what we're hearing from districts need to be some of the areas that are reinforced in the teacher education program. Mm-hmm.
I think it's very important. In the follow-up, please. The follow-up. you made reference to PASS and the proficiency. Pressures on student outlays reading, you know, kind of a dramatic one, but in the Arizonian today, we're talking about these three students from Burns.
Yeah.
Teachers are feeling that pressure. Students are, you know, read about it all the time. And like, for instance, I know, and I'm kind of vacillating here on a different number of points, but like, for instance, the PASS has a component of foreign language, if I understand it correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think I heard them say, well, we're really not introducing that in the elementary school or the kindergarten where it should start, and then maybe we should drop that. And then our job, as I understand it, is trying to provide what the cost of a quality education is. And those, can we do both? Can we say, well, we want to do that, and we want to pass these foreign language things? I'm really lost on some of these things. They seem to be all interrelated, but everyone, like you said, well, it seems like we should do that. But what are we going to do? I'm a pragmatist. I like to know, what are we going to do? The Department of Education, I should say.
I think actually what I would tell you is that if we've learned anything, it's that if we really do want quality, we can't go as fast as we thought we could.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to make sure that what we do is quality. And the recommendation that was done by a study group that went to the State Board of Education was to slow some areas. It was also, for example, like the reading was mentioned in terms of the number of work samples that would need to be put in place for next year. The fact of the matter is that most districts have not had an opportunity to train their teachers to do those classroom assignments in reading yet. They've not had that opportunity. And if that's the case, then we've got to acknowledge that. And so the recommendation to the state board was to postpone implementing that for students. In other words, to continue to work on it, to continue to make sure that we're building that kind of quality, that we're offering the opportunities to students, but not that we say, next year, even though we've only trained a third of the teachers in the state, we're going to say students are accountable for having those classroom assignments done. The burden for three teachers who've not had training to score those student assignments is huge. You get better at it the more you do it. But to expect that the very first year that you do it, you can grade all of those assignments is probably not very realistic. And so the recommendation to the state board, which I presume they have no reason to think that they will not adopt, is to postpone adding on. In other words, not looking at this being an additive model, but one where we refine the quality and think every time we have another piece to add on, how does this fit with the rest of the system?
Mm-hmm.
Not, we've done this and we've done this, now we're going to add on this and add on this and add on this, but to say, we're at this point, what do we need to do now to make this really a good system? And the state board's looking at the numbers of work samples. We're looking at the issues of the benchmark grade levels. There's a lot of concern that we aren't going to have any fifth grade teachers.
Representative Hoffman made a good comment. I mentioned that last time when we're talking about accountability. 90%, 70%, I think, and I'm leaving on there, was talking, one of them was talking about some schools are working very, very hard to get it, and maybe other schools already have it. And related to the accountability in the past and all that stuff, and the slowing things down, I think this accountability issue is an extremely difficult one because of all the things you're talking about, the State Department of Education doesn't have it all in place, and yet the teachers are supposed to be accountable, and are they going to be, how are they going to be treated? Are they going to be called bad guys because they didn't get, they only had 70%, you know? That's another issue that I think I would hope that the Department of Education could try to make it clear that these percentages are, maybe as a business model, work, but when you're talking about children, I don't think it's really.
You need to clarify that is a statewide goal for 90%, not an individual school building goal for 90%, because there's a substantial difference in what you would expect for a statewide goal.
This issue reminds me of when we created the Department of Human Resources in 1971. And we created a Children's Services Division, and we did a lot of combining without having a plan in place of how we were going to implement that plan. And the department is at that same level. We implemented, the legislature passed the concepts and some laws, and without having a plan as to how it's going to go forward. Gerald, I'm going to show this, but, and so as I sit here listening, that it reminds me of the time when I was in the agency, and some of the same concerns that I'm hearing here were some of the concerns that we expressed, and it was terribly, terribly frustrating to go through that kind of a process when you don't have a plan in place and you don't know how you're going to get there, but yet you have a legislative mandate to implement this grand comprehensive scheme. That was just my editorial comment. Daryl.
Daryl Trussell. I was kind of really, I think, hit on what we're all about here, and that's the funding issue. What I hear coming out now is the teachers need to be trained more on how to grade the work samples, how to assess those, and that's going to take more time. Well, now you're talking about time versus money. We can do it a lot faster, but there's nothing there for the training. I can speak personally to that, in that we have not had any money to bring people in from the state. You guys know the standards. You've got it all right there. You could come out and probably one day do a great job of getting us on board. We didn't have that capability. We were fortunate that we just happened to have hired a state scoring director who came and taught at our school, and so now we have someone in our building who knows what a good work sample looks like, how to write a work sample that works, how to grade it so that everyone on in the math department at least can score that consistently. And so I guess what we need to start addressing here is, do we want it sooner or do we want it later? And, you know, my big concern here is I realize this committee is about what can we do and, you know, with the money from the legislation in the next couple of years. Well, for math and English, it's now. The future's now. Mm-hmm. We're giving out certificates of initial mastery this year, but yet we're doing it with mirrors, so to speak.
He's mentioned something that I was thinking about the hub, but I take it a little further. You've talked, I think it's been pretty well established that there has been a lack of quality training, and that seems to me from the very beginning, from the training of what the standards are, what they meant, and then how do we get there, and so forth. You also mentioned that the way I heard you, the department thing and other people, so maybe we have to postpone the timeline. My thought about that is that's going to fail. Unless the postponement isn't going to get you anywhere, unless you identify what the issue is in this lack of training. Is it a lack of time? Is it a lack of money? Is it a lack of quality trainers? Just postponing it, that's just not taking you one step forward. Do you identify the issue, and then you bring that issue to the legislature and say, look, we are not going to be able to fulfill what you have requested of us unless we have blah, 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 and be able to back that up with information.
We We did have a package that we shared with the Legislative Interim Committee, and we did have a package that went to the governor, but it's not part of what you received.
The governor didn't include it.
And so you don't have that information. I think we have a very clear idea of what it would take, and I will share with you, though, that the concern was not that that shouldn't be there. The concern was that there simply wasn't enough funding for schools. There wasn't enough basic funding for schools to have to even be worrying about this yet. So
but
that was the decision that was made.
Yeah. Is that saying that you can come back
to
it's, yes. It's the administrative work. I don't need it, the telephone numbers from everyone.
I won't need the legislative members, just the public members.
See, my concern is that basically then this committee is wasting its time. If you're going to, not just you personally, but other people are going to say, yes, we've identified the issues, but we've been told or so on and so forth that these aren't out there for us. So the same thing will happen to us. We'll go identify the same issue and be told the same thing, and we will be fooling all of ourselves if we say we've really addressed the quality education model. So when you said you had this package that you took to the interim committee and to the governor's budget, did you have in addition to the figures you needed some underlying information, assumptions, whatever, to say this is, in order to get here, this is what we need? We would, you know, whether it be in bodies or so forth, and this is what they would do, and this is what it would cost. And if we don't have that, we are not going to be able to meet the standards or the expectations of the quality education.
Just before you answer that, you may think that you're wasting your time. I do not think that I'm wasting my time, and I don't think that the individuals on this committee believe that they're wasting their time. Thank you.
I can share with you, we have done quite a bit of work to identify what it would take in terms of professional development from a leadership standpoint. In other words, Daryl talked about somebody from the Department of Education coming. It actually doesn't have to be someone from the Department of Education, but it has to be someone who has that information and knows how to do it. We have a lot of excellent trainers in the state, and they can be made available to do that. We have identified what that leadership budget would be, but there are two parts to this. There's a leadership budget, and then there is money for the school districts to implement that, because it doesn't do any good to have training for a day and then have teachers never be able to practice it, never to be able to come together and check to see if they've learned it appropriately, a lot of quality control issues. So it's a two-part process, and I think that the situation that we're facing now is just the basic part at the district level, at the local school building level, has got to be the first piece. And then beyond that, there certainly should be some dollars allocated for leadership. The starting piece that you do have in your budget is the curriculum staff and the assessment.
Yes. I mean, training isn't just like a booster shot.
Mm-hmm.
And as we're looking at grading work samples, consistency is extremely important.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, in order to, if you're dealing with 190 students on a block schedule of an interview, and I mean, I won't begin to add up all the work samples, but we're all doing this. In order to have consistency in grading our samples, we have to have time to work together.
Mm-hmm.
Our half an hour lunch is 7:00. So, and that time, and a lot of times legislators, public government understand, if you're going to give teachers time, someone else has to be taking care of their kids, or it has to be time in the summer. And it's kind of an ongoing process. We get new teachers, and we are supposed to be consistent, and we're really intense about it. When is this teacher training going to happen, and when the teachers have time to extend supervising and then of course you have this whole issue of is it realistic to expect kids to deal with 190 students and all these other things they're doing and that's not enough. I know you brought it up.
We are constantly trying to address those issues, and I think part of it we don't have an answer to. I'm sorry, but it's absurd. It is absurd that an English teacher expected to have students reach standards has 190 students. It just makes my blood boil. I just can't understand why that would be the case, and I don't understand why it is that we're not able to face head-on the fact that having an English teacher responsible for scoring or for grading class assignments, papers, in the old terms, for students in an English class is a larger piece of work than for a PE teacher that does not have homework assignments. And at some point, we're going to have to acknowledge that there has to be some variation in the way we put our whole building together as we work as a team to try and do this. So a portion of it is a policy issue. A portion of it is an operational issue that really needs to just be put on the table and discussed freely and openly, and we've got to try to address it. And there are some districts actually in school buildings that have made some good progress in that area. And we hope to be able to bring those kind of solutions that have come from the field, really about scheduling and some of those issues, make them more public and have them more readily shared across the state, because we just are going to kill ourselves this way. There's a whole issue of prioritization. We've created something that's large. As you add on new pieces, you have to say, what portion of this that we had previously are we going to make a decision to give up? And there are some pieces that, by golly, we could give up. And the kids wouldn't be disappointed, and the parents wouldn't be disappointed, and the teachers wouldn't be disappointed. And we've got, I think, to really do some work and acknowledge that some of those things are the case.
Martin.
Yes, I'm Martin Bonsi from Corvallis. I know among our college, no matter what level we teach, we all go through that incredible same thing that Diane described. As a fourth, fifth grade teacher, I, of course, have to score student work in math and speaking and reading and, you know, for next year. And,
Superintendent and I are thinking about hero awards.
Well, it's an interesting dilemma for all of us. But one of the things that always strikes me when we talk about professional development opportunities or a time like Diane did about getting together with our colleagues to calibrate our scoring of student work and all of those issues is I'm always reminded that our professional development opportunities in recent years have been what we have started to describe as drive-by workshops. Because you do it for, you know, it happens in an instant, and then all of a sudden you say, oh, yeah, right, yeah, I really know that now.
Yeah.
You know, the new scoring guide or something like that, or the new reading performance test. So I know that the department is very sensitive to that, and I just want to make sure that continues to be part of the dialogue. We don't need drive-by workshops. We need real good, substantive, professional development.
Why, and I have to say this, why is it that we know what good quality teaching, in-depth teaching is for students, but we can't translate that to what good quality in-depth teaching is for adults?
Mm-hmm.
For as an institution, we've got some work to make that.
I want to thank you for coming and sharing with us and all of your hard work and what you're doing. And, Madam Chair, I have one more question to answer. I promise I'll be short. I perceive our job on this review committee, and I'm going to be so bold as to say part of the Department of Education's job would be to articulate what you were saying. I think we need to lay it out to the public. If this is what quality education really costs, and if you choose to get, and jack it up, Department of Education, by saying, yes, it does this and this, and with some of the things that you were asking about, Representative, of what are the costs that you come up with, and then let the public, because they're going to call it professional legislators, and so, but if they are in the dark, most of us think about
except for educators, think about what it was like when we were in school. I think if somebody I can remember. But I think that's one of our jobs, is to say, this is what the quality education costs. Now, do you public want to cough up the money to do that, or don't you? But let's not play games. And I think, you know, unfortunately, when you get into politics, that's what happens. You get this game playing stuff. And who suffers? The children. You know, the future of Oregon's in the school classroom or walking the streets, you know, because they dropped out. So, I love that.
One of the comments that Superintendent Brown made, and I'm sorry that some people weren't here early enough to hear his presentation, where he said that there was some unfinished business in the quality ed model that he thought this group should look at. And one of the points that he made is that he felt that we needed to attempt to define what a basic education is. And that's not just including math. It's including the arts and some of those issues. And that is not within the scope of the model. I think several weeks ago I requested that you begin looking at, so that we can begin to move this process ahead, questions that need to be answered before the model can be fully implemented. And so, and tonight I'm going to be the teacher, and your homework assignment is to begin to put those questions that we've talked about and that you probably have here but haven't expressed in the meeting on paper, so that our next meeting we can begin to really come to some definitive kinds of areas, and that's one of them. We really need to begin to create those lists, mm-hmm. so that we can begin to start looking forward. And also at our next meeting, I would like to bring, if we can get them to come, someone from the Cascade Policy who has also looked at the model, so that you're getting enough views from everyone that some of your questions can be answered, so that we can begin to work in and begin to start talking in some work study groups. You also have before you today, you had asked, in fact, Representative Erbilaw had asked what was our task, so we asked the speaker to give us in writing what our charge was, and you have that letter from her to this committee, and I think it's pretty descriptive of what her expectations are from us. We can ask. We're waiting for the final. The final field has not been completed. They did not want to come until that was done, because for some of the questions that we had asked the last time, you know, they were very hesitant to respond to them since it was still in draft. So I'm waiting for that final document to be put on my desk, and then we will invite the doctor back to talk to us.
I'll ask a very, I guess, direct question, Madam Chair. Thank you, Martin Bronson. I'd like to ask a very direct question about the Cascade Policy folks coming in. They have not been noted as being very supportive of public education in general. They have a lot of agenda issues related to things that I don't think are very focused on providing resources to public schools in Oregon in order to promote a quality education model for all of us. I'm kind of curious to know why they've been invited to kind of share their perspective. I don't think it's a perspective that's probably shared by, you know, maybe those of us that are working in the schools. And I guess that's as direct as I can be about it. I'm kind of curious.
I have no basic reason, just that they too are a group that's interested in education, and I just try to get everybody that's interested.
Right. And I have, thank you. I was just going to follow up. I have no problem hearing, you know, their perspectives, but you know, I know that those of us that work in our public school systems obviously are charged to try to figure out what we can do along with the legislature, how we can provide the best education for the kids around Oregon, and I just want to make sure we keep that in perspective, because I think what we'll be seeing is a relatively political or a politicized perspective on that, as opposed to the kinds of things we've been talking about our last two meetings.
Well, I'll make sure that Jan makes sure that if you're communicating with them, if they can't fulfill that desire, then we won't invite them.
That'd be great. Yeah. Yeah. So, thank you.
I have no problem with that.
Thank you.
Julie?
I'm just going to add, Madam Chairman, that you know, I'm not familiar with this group, but that we didn't want to leave anyone else.
Diane?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. With that, we are adjourned. You and Julie.
Okay.